Let's pop the cork to the last rain report of 2012 in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. From the Radio Amateur Information Network, I'm Kent Peterson, KC0DGY, with this rain report. The 2012 Dayton Hamvention Forum Guide wrote, "Basic antenna physics date back to 600 BC. This second excerpt from a 2012 Dayton Hamvention Forum was taken from a talk by Frank Biafor, WS8B. His talk is based on the landmark book Antennas by John Krause, K8JK. Our second excerpt from Frank's talk is entitled Physics and the First Antenna.
By this time, there were some societies that began to recognize successes, and in this case, the AIEE recognized Marconi's invention as the radio. Now, there are arguments to that coming up in a moment. Of course, there was Thomas Edison, who didn't get really involved with the radio, but he made a lot of things that eventually helped advance radio. Then there's Robert Vandegrift. I just threw him in here because he developed the Vandegrift generator and demonstrated electrostatics. And then there was Nikola Tesla. I call him the electromagnetic showboat because he did a lot of demonstrations. You can see him sitting back there inside a Faraday cage with sparks flying around. He also tried to demonstrate wireless transmission. There were a lot of arguments. That's why societies like the one that Bell was in had to confirm who did what. Tesla also got in a lot of arguments with Thomas Edison, trying to decide how we're going to transmit electricity. One wanted to do it with DC. That was Thomas Edison. Tesla wanted to do it with AC. So he is credited for the alternating current system that we have around the world today. And there was this guy. Anybody know who this is? Show of hands. Who's this guy? How did you know? How did you know? You got a bunch of pictures. You didn't read the code above there, though. Now, that's Samuel F.B. Morris. My name is Frank Biafor, and my mother named me FB, so she knew I was going to be a ham. So that's it. And then there was Chandra Bose, also given credit for maybe being the first inventor of radio. He did work up in the 60 gigahertz microwave range, also is folded into that world of radio and radio inventors. Then we move along in about 1922 period of time, and we've got Fleming, who developed what's called the valve in England, and they sometimes still call electron tubes valves in England. And this allowed controlled oscillation and amplification. And then along came Lee DeForest, who also refined the electron tube. Having these two devices, you were able then to come up with a clean signal. Prior to that, you had an arc and a spark gap. And you can imagine how broad-banded that was. I mean, try to do a 100-watt spark gap transmitter in your house and see how the neighbors feel when they're trying to play their electric organ. And then there was Hiram Percy Maxim. I know we know a lot about him for the fact that he put together the foundation for the American Radio Relay League, but he also, at that time, because science still wasn't that well established in the world of radio, groups like the ARRL began to support research. And, of course, the ARRL stands for the American Radio Relay League. So by that time, the good and the bad of radio was known. And at the time, it wasn't very predictable. So to be able to get signals from one point to another, oftentimes they had to be relayed. And even till today, if anybody operate on mid cars or east cars or whatever, and you play around with that, you know there are times when net control can hear something, but you can't. But in a state of an emergency, you can set up a series of relays and still get the signal across. And us hams still can come to the rescue during when Armageddon comes. To that end, ARRL sponsored Paul Goodley, who went to Scotland from Greenwich, Connecticut. They set up a large antenna array as well as in Scotland and transmitted a signal on 200 meters and bridged the ocean terrestrial to terrestrial. By this time, boats were using spark gap transmitters as they crossed the sea, but there was not very reliable communication aside from point to point in one continent. Then came Carl Jansky. Carl Jansky did a lot of work studying thunderstorms and forms of static electricity, and he built a pretty good sized beam. And he discovered that the atmosphere had quite a bit of static, and as he rotated the beam, he discovered that that static was coming from the sun. And if you ever have a chance to go to Green Bank, West Virginia, there's a huge array of antennas, and there is a sun parabolic there where they will run it across the sun and create a distribution curve showing that. Quite a fascinating place. That's when attention began to be given to sunspots and sunspot activity, which affects propagation. Then there was Colpitts. My high school electronics professor, Mr. Cox, always forced us to remember the three guys, Colpitts, Hartley, and Armstrong, and their oscillators. So we had to remember that. And then, of course, if you were lucky enough to get your ham radio license way back then as well, you not only had to know these guys, you had to sit down and draw this thing for the FCC examiner. He literally asked you to draw this circuit. Again, I see some heads nodding. You remember that, right? Yeah, so this young man is taking his test today. You're pretty lucky. You don't have to do that. You can just one of four questions that you got to study. We can't talk about radio and antennas if we don't talk about Mr. Yagi and Mr. Uda. Now, many of you think this is a Yagi antenna. Poor Uda, who helped do that too, but his name was second on the book, never gets the credit for that. But so I thought I'd give a chance to for you guys to see that there were two characters. Did I skip Armstrong? Let's take them again. Colpitts and his oscillator, Hartley and his oscillator, and Armstrong and his oscillator. And back in those days, in the 20s and 30s, there were a lot of argument over who invented what, to the point where if they had guns, they would have shot each other, I think.
You're listening to the second excerpt from a 2012 Dayton Hamvention Forum by Frank Beaufort, WS8B, whose talk he entitled Physics and the First Antenna. We'll resume his talk in a moment. This is the Rain Report.
Now we come back, completely circle around to John Krause. A little bit about what inspired me to do this presentation in the first place. Last year I had an opportunity to build, I was inquired by a customer to build a helico antenna that covered from 225 to around 265 megahertz. It was for satellite communication. You think nothing operates in UHF anymore, but yes, there are equipment that operates in UHF. And I didn't know where to start. So the first thing I did to prove whether or not we could do that is build one on 440. How many of you, show of hands, have built a John Krause helical? Got one in the back. One. I'm surprised. In this case, we used LMR 400 for the radiators. But he was sitting in a microwave class, I think around 1949, John Krause. And John was a ham radio operator also. And it just struck him about this antenna, that he could build a helical antenna that the total one winding would be a wavelength and the spacing would be a quarter wavelength, and he built it. And lo and behold, it resonated at a specific band of frequencies. Now, he did have a tough time matching it. It came out about 200 ohms, so he had to do some capacitive coupling to match it, but he was able to match it. Well, I was stuck. I got this request to build 35 of these, and I didn't know where to begin. And my neighbor used to teach at Wright State and worked at Wright Labs, and so he dug down in his billions of books and came up with this book. So I reverse engineered this thing, came up with these antennas, and got an order to build 35 of them last year. So that's what got me started into really wanting to dig into John Krause, which motivated me to lead this forum. I was talking to a friend the other day who, I don't know, he walked in here, but he walked back out, Mike Coulter. Mike, you here? He went to the Edison Welding Institute, which is advanced science for metallurgy, and they named the building after John Krause because of the impact that he made at Ohio State. He was educated in that state up north called Michigan, and then he came down to Ohio. Yeah, y'all didn't get that, did you? Some of you got that, okay. And began to work with building antennas that would listen to deep space. And this big ear was constructed, which that theory became radio telescopes. And I mentioned this facility in West Virginia, and there are others around the world that listen to deep space and are able to do some very, very interesting things. All right, so we come crank all the way back to the top again. So I have to ask the question again. Who invented radio? Krause, okay. Marconi. Okay, we got Krause and Marconi. Anybody else? Who? Bose? Hurst. Hertz. Okay, Hertz. Okay, very good. All right. A lot of guesses, all right? I talked about all these characters, right? Strung this all together. You know, one thing led to another and led to another and led to another. And although Hertz did his thing and the Marconi strapped it together and Bose did his stuff and everything, I don't know whether you can really give anybody credit for radio. But I want to ask you this question. Now, I mentioned that a lot of these guys are philosophers and stuff. You know what they all have in common? Hair. Yeah, funny hair. That's one thing. And I look around here and I see funny hair too. So that's kind of what one thing that a lot of them had in common. Curiosity. What else? Yes. Ham radio operators, but we didn't do ham radio until like 1910, but you're close. The experiment. I'm going to give you a hint. None of them were professionals. That's correct. These guys were all amateurs. So we come back, one more answer. So, you know, was it Talus way back 600 BC? Or could it be you? You all are amateurs. The one thing about the world of radio and antennas is that it's not all been invented yet. I was with somebody on the floor a little bit ago, my son actually. He was looking around. He said, Dad, can you imagine we were here 10 years ago and we got all these flat screens and these little type of things. And 10 years ago, they had the big fat tubes. Today, I go around there and I look at software-defined radio and I saw a tiny little QRP radio, 5 watts, about this big, sitting out there and so on. The advancement continues and continues and continues, and we see it here. We talked about the invention of radio. The invention of radio hasn't stopped. All of you can still continue research in radio and antennas.
That concludes this 2012 Dayton Hamvention Talk, Physics and the First Antenna, given by Frank Biafor, WS8B. Before we go, just a reminder that Hap Holly, KC9RP, RAIN's founder-producer, is having his 27 radio stories he has compiled posted on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/SUHFARS. That's S-U-H-F-A-R-S. Hap has had at least one a day posted since December 8th, and each one posted has a link to a YouTube or other songs containing the word radio in their lyrics. He will contribute his own essay to his radio stories on January 1st. All 27 of them will remain posted for a while on facebook.com/SUHFARS, thanks to the editing and assistance of Noel Williams, KE9AU, a member of the SUHFARS, pronounced SUFARS, the Suburban UHF Amateur Radio Society of Chicago. The RAIN Report is copyright 1990-2012, RAIN, all rights reserved. Now, for everyone connected with the Radio Amateur Information Network, I'm Kent Peterson, KC0DGY, wishing you a very 73, and Happy New Year! From the RAIN Report, www.therainreport.com.